Welcome to the 40K Lorecast.
Welcome to the 40K Lorecast with me, John Barsotti, and Brad Chester.
This guy.
On today's episode, we'll be doing part two of our coverage of The Ruinous Powers, The Warp. Last episode, we did Korn and Zeech. Today, we're doing the two gods that those two hate the most. And also, the feeling is quite mutual between Nurgle and Slaanesh and Korn and Zeech. There is abject hatred. Before we go, though, let's do us a favor, if you could, like and subscribe to the podcast. If you haven't left us a review yet, it does help a lot, so please go ahead and leave one. If you don't like what we're doing, jump into Discord and tell us. You can leave a negative review, but... kind of a dick move, man.
Or instead of a negative review, what you can do is just tell us.
Yeah,
what
you
we
just
did,
tell us and say, hey,
and we'll fix it
better. We will literally fix it.
We will try to do better. We would Joey Swillett. We'll do better.
A couple of just quick plugs. One is we also have a Patreon. We're hoping to upgrade some of this equipment at some point. If you guys want to help us out, we'd appreciate it. You don't have to.
Second, bigger thing.
Yeah.
I do coaching for a living.
Yes. That's the other one.
I should probably mention it. You know.
We keep forgetting to mention that any of you who are playing 40K at either a competitive or even a non-competitive level and just want to understand the game better, Brad is available. He doesn't have to come to your house and do it in person. He uses TTS and a bunch of these programs. For those who don't even know what TTS is, it's a way to play this game online that Brad can also teach you how to do. But it is something he has. How do they reach you, Brad? Because someone asked this question.
Bradchester1@gmail.com. Yeah, I have two others, but I'm just going to go with that one right now because it's the easiest.
Let's dive in to this episode. Well, let's dive into Nurgle first, who he is, more about him, like what his followers do, etc. So Nurgle, before we begin, I do want to mention Nurgle might be, I think, the most popular of the gods amongst the player base. I'm trying to think through. It's Nurgle,
it's Korn. It's back and forth. It's whether you were being serious or not, because there's a lot. Nurgle by far is the comedy in the game. That's because the fact of the matter is Nurgle's trying to do right by you. He might accidentally kill you while doing it, but you were just trying to have a good time.
Exactly.
When one of his is beasts of Nurgle and they just want to hug you.
Yeah.
They're puppies.
Nurgle tends to be the army. They can be very good competitively, but people tend to play them who are a bit more fun in mind. So I think in my experience, Nurgle, I've played against a lot of Nurgle over the years, and the games are usually pretty good.
And the thing is he can be serious because, I mean, he is the god of death, decay, and pestilence.
Right.
But he's also the god of entropy. He's the god of effectively getting it ready for rebirth. He's burning the forest down.
Exactly. And that's where the whole thing about Nurgle, if you read it kind of what I would call the wrong way, Nurgle is the god of death and disease and decay. And people think of that and they go, oh, wow, this is a pretty evil god. It's some of the saddest things that can happen in your life. Death, disease, decay. This is some of the worst things that happen to you. But Nurgle's viewed as nicknamed as Grandfather Nurgle. And it's the warming embrace of Nurgle. Because what Nurgle actually is he's explaining to all of his followers, yes, you're going to die. Yes, you will decay. Yes, you will, you know, disintegrate over time. But then you will be reborn as something else. Not necessarily, you know, Hindu reincarnation level, but more just, you know, scientifically, we're all made up of carbon atoms.
He's circle of life again. Yeah. Mufasa told you about it.
Exactly. It's Mufasa. Yeah, he's the Mufasa of of 40K. So this is important because when we talk about Nurgle's effect, he's really been there forever. So as you probably heard me complain pretty heavily on the cast about the Chaos Gods, where my point was like, the Korn was the first god because he comes from the anger of violence. Like, no, it feels like pestilence and decay would have gotten there first.
Because they've always existed.
Yeah, they actually predate, you know, bacterium are technically multi-celled, but some of the first
really splitting, settle down there.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, it really dates way back. But anyway,
you're gonna Neil deGrasse Tyson us on this.
There we go. So, Nurgle. And the thing too is also remember Nurgle's rotting and decay is it's not just organic materials that rot and decay. It's also inorganic materials. A planet that during the Dark Age of Technology died off. All those buildings are turning to rust or ash or whatever it is.
I'll give it a throw out and people can yell at me on this. I think Nurgle also wants ideas, thoughts, societies, civilizations. He wants them to decay for a new one to come in.
That could make sense. That would also help why Zeej hates Nurgle.
Yep.
When I say hates Nurgle.
Hates.
Ooh. Slight, we're just, we probably should call it out now. Slaanesh hates Khorne. Khorne hates Slaanesh.
Khorne hates Slaanesh way more than Khorne Slaanesh.
Khorne really hates Slaanesh. Slaanesh just finds Khorne annoying.
He thinks, Khorne effectively thinks Slaanesh is a fop.
Yeah. Nurgle doesn't really care about Zeej, kind of in that same way. Zeej has nothing but abject hatred for Nurgle.
Well, when someone is ruining everything that you do by their very existence, you're probably not going to be super cool with
it. Well, and it's like, because every time, it's also that piece, every time one of Zeech's plans doesn't work, it usually goes to Nurgle's favor, where Zeech has some plan, like, you know, these guys are going to not die, they're going to do this, and I'm going to cheat time and cheat this, or information, whatever. And every time it doesn't work, Nurgle just goes, okay.
Well, also, Nurgle's accidentally ruining plans because he's poisoned both glasses. He doesn't care.
Yeah, he doesn't care.
I know that you know that you know that I know. He's like, I just poisoned them both.
If you kind of compare this cast to our last cast, the reason we lined it up this way is this next little piece, is that Nurgle, like Khorne, isn't always affecting his biggest piece. What he does just exists in and of itself. He helps it along quite a bit, you know, especially with disease. Big fan of spreading that. But like Khorne, Nurgle's the god of something that just is going to happen, versus Slaanesh, much like Zeech, is a god of a desire and a want. So you see,
he has more to have plans in play. Yeah.
So that's kind of why, another reason why we line these up this way. So to Nurgle's point, though, what we were just discussing, he really is only interested in what we'd call the long game. Nurgle's viewpoint is everything will eventually decay, everything will eventually die. He's not looking to like spread a disease through the entire galaxy and wipe out all life. He just wants to make sure. I mean, the Destroyer.
He will give boons, cough, typhus.
Yeah.
Things of that nature. He will give boons to his most loyal of servants that want to spread, put this out there, increase his realm, his power, and everything. By the way, Grandfather Nurgle, while we ha-ha, the ruinous powers are still not cool dudes.
No. He's bad.
Yeah, like, he's doing evil a lot.
I mean, disease.
He's doing ha-ha fun evil sometimes, but it's still pretty evil.
The pestilence, when you're in the middle of it, is horrifying. And Nurgle's trying to actually increase that level. We'll dive into some stuff his followers do. So I'm not pretending he is good, but what I'm more referring to is he is the god of, I would almost refer to as, inevitability.
Yeah.
It's just something you cannot avoid Nurgle. Even the Eldar, with their extremely long lifespans, or the old ones, still eventually were going to die and decay. Things that they built.
And you can say that. That's why I went into the ideas, the philosophy, the civilizations, because that still powers Nurgle up. The fall of the Eldar, while it was Slaanesh that reaped it, the fall of those lost ideas, those lost society, that is entropy.
Yeah, the crumble. there were crumbling worlds all over the place. That's Nurgle's just, okay.
It's still Nurgle power.
Yeah, when Wraithbone breaks down, Nurgle's...
Yeah, when Nurgle's you lose happy. All those things, that's still Nurgle.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, the other one to keep... interesting one that I kind of wanted to bring out is that anything that is dying and decaying benefits Nurgle. So is the Emperor decaying on the Golden Throne?
Nope. He's saran wrapped in there. Yeah. He's keeping the freshness in.
Just pointing it out.
Like, originally, yes, but also, when Malcador, well, you know, we're going to talk about that next
episode. Malcador disintegrated. Yeah, these are just, I'm just giving this example. Or how about the fact that the Imperium collapsing on itself in sometimes?
Yeah.
That one's big. Yeah.
Nurgle's a fan of Hive Worlds. Also.
Exactly. Well, every god's a fan of Hive Worlds. There's really
that's true.
The Hive Worlds are the greatest boon.
Line up to be chaos.
Yeah, so this is basically, and not even one. They're going to hit all four at A++ tier every single time. You know,
I'm going to read John's notes because there's so much venom that comes in here. Because John says Nurgle was the third god to gain sentience, and then immediately goes into diatribe about. Come on!
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. I mean, okay, fine. The Eldar were long-lived, but every other being in the galaxy wasn't. Death, decay, and
pestilence. Necron Tyr.
Yeah.
Necron Tyr got saddled with a, you're going to die. Why? Because you are. Can we do anything about it? Nope. And Nurgle's like, double gunsing it, and I refuse to believe that he wasn't double gunsing
it. Okay, I just, fine, we're going to do this now. Necrontyr. So the Necrontyr were dying constantly.
They were born with dying.
Well, okay, it's better. They also were incredibly aggressive, who just loved killing everything.
War.
Corn. Were obsessed with knowledge and learning and furthering a science. Tzeentch.
Which they're still the most advanced race in the galaxy.
And when they would do war, they would take on noble adversaries. They'd also just slaughter innocent civilians. Really, all I'm saying is the Necrontyr should have launched all four Chaos Gods.
True story. Yeah, so, they could have been.
And they were also a larger, because I'm going to keep shitting on this because I can. All three of the four Chaos Gods launched during the Dark Ages, Middle Ages of mankind, when there were 350 million people on one planet. The Necrontyr spanned systems, multiple systems, and were doing this there. But that wasn't enough to disturb the warp. Okay.
Maybe they were the catalyst to start them going.
Yeah. Okay. That's all I'm going to say. Adorable guys.
I think the Black Plague was probably what created Nurgle. I'm drinking wine on this.
Yeah, because Brad knows I'm going to throw something at him when he says that. Or was the Black Plague created by Nurgle? Because while looking at the entire Milky Way, here's this one blue planet in the off to the left.
Fairly unpopulated planet, by the way. Unpopulated
planet. And we're going to affect a disease that affected less than a quarter of the population there.
A very small population.
Yeah. Look, I get this was written by Europeans.
On a water planet with beings that don't live in the water.
This is why the rest of the world hates Europe. It hates like the Western civilization. Because this is what we do. Like, yeah, the Black Plague was so important. It affected the entire galaxy. And people living in Africa, Asia, North America, South America were like, yeah, we actually weren't even aware it was happening because it didn't matter to us. But Europe lost a bunch of people. Woo.
It's all anyway,
but that's who wrote the book. So there we go. Moving on. Let's just jump before I just keep flogging the dead horse. I actually don't know which way that is. Into the powers of Nurgle. So Nurgle relishes in the decay and rebirth of all matter. Nothing exists without being made of something that came before. That is a thing about civilization. Even though the human population is the highest level it's ever been on the planet, but the number of carbon atoms has not changed. Nothing has shifted in our planet. So we will always have a certain amount of life that's available here. Cough, cough, high rolls don't make sense, but whatever.
I feel that I already explained Mufasa's circle of life to you.
It's fine. There's so many little things of logistics.
Mufasa,
that
circle of life. Yeah. Listen, Simba, let me tell it to you one more time.
Fine. I've actually only seen the movie one time ever. I'm not a Disney person. Just
I didn't even know you were a communist.
I liked Looney Tunes. It was actually funny and interesting. Sorry. It's like, here's Mickey Mouse, and then here's Daffy Duck or Bugs Bunny. One of them were Tasmanian Devil. All those characters are better. Anyway, that was a diatribe for old people, because the rest of you are like, I don't know what you're talking about. but let's dive into kind of what Nurgle really does more specifically get into. So Nurgle's thing about decay, death, it's not a weapon. It's a means to the end. Does he use it as a weapon? Yes. Do his force use it as a weapon? Yes.
100%.
But it is to create something for Nurgle. Nurgle doesn't really take joy in you suffering from a plague. He takes joy in the plague overtaking you and then turning into the rebirth.
And the thing is that some of his minions, especially the greater demons, do that by just existing.
Yes,
they do fight. Yes, they do use it as a weapon, but they don't have to. They just do it. Their mere presence infects.
Is disease. Yep. Yeah, they wander, and we'll get into Nurglings in a little bit. They're adorable. The thing about where Nurgle gets his converts, my son went through some health things, so this is real. I can understand this. Most of Nurgle's followers are people who are in some form of suffering, either they themselves or someone else. And
this is also what he does kind of evil, because Nurgle always gives you...
No, Nurgle's evil.
Yeah, what I'm saying. But I'm saying that everything he touches when he's making conscious choices, when he's doing stuff, because every single devil contract, we'll say for all of the Chaos Gods, is shitty. Because almost always you never read the fine print of Nurgle, which isn't, I'm going to cure you. It's going to be, you're not going to die.
People reach out to Nurgle when they're at their ultimate level of suffering. We saw this with Mortarion when the destroyer plague. No, the
it's a thing. It was a version of it, but he was infected. Through. You know, when they got lost in the warp. Mm-hmm. I want to get this done. And again, the pact was you and your men will not die. And that's the pact that's made with most people that Nurgle makes pacts with, which is you will still be in existence effectively. Am I going to cure you of this? Nope.
But you will stop suffering. And that was
sometimes you'll learn to deal with your suffering.
Well, it's interesting because I mean that's more when you read about it, it's again a lot of the it depends again who he's doing the boon for. But usually it is whatever is killing you continues to kill you, but you either doesn't hurt you anymore or you don't care about the hurt. It's kind of somewhere in that realm. So in Anathema, he also will make the infection worse and make it more contagious. So he will
almost always more contagious to
you, and he will take everyone else with you. So Nurgle's bad. Like, I don't want anyone thinking like I'm a fan of Nurgle. I'm not. It's just, but GW took what I think would be the most depressing of the Chaos Gods. And actually, I'll give him credit. I shit on GW writing a lot, so I need to give him some credit here. If you're thinking about the four Chaos Gods, mm-hmm. the most depressing is the one who's over disease and pestilence, and they went out of their way to make it not just depressing and sad.
Yeah, they made some of his minions hilarious. Yep. They made him Grandfather Nurgle in his loving embrace. Mm-hmm. They did a good job of this.
Yeah, and so Nurgle's followers are usually the happiest and most joyous of the followers, whereas, I mean, Khorne's followers, they're not happy and they're having a good time. You know, Tzeentch's followers, I think they're actually objectively miserable, but they're always searching for something.
No, because every corner is going to be that next thing.
Like they are just, they're that person who's been playing the lottery every day for their entire life and never winning. That's Tzeentch. And we get the Slaanesh in a bit. Slaanesh actually has some really nasty stuff that Slaanesh pulls off on you. Nurgle's the only one that kind of like does somewhat fulfill the prophecy, and the followers seem to embrace the prophecy. Once they, you know, quote unquote, figure it out. I mean, it's a cult, but once they kind of figure it out, then they go, oh yeah, I am supposed to die and decay so that more life can be born. And I'm going to spread this great knowledge. Actually,
because that'll give me the favor of my God.
As I'm saying it out loud, I'm like, yeah, it's cult. It's Scientology. It's like, hey, I figured this out. Let me go spread to the rest of you. But I'm like, just trying to talk to you about like phaetons or whatever the hell those people have. They're actually spreading the destroyer plague. So yeah, not helpful. So yeah, I mean, Nurgle just, that's what it is. And followers of Nurgle just want to rot and then die. That is their goal, is to rot and die. As we covered the last time, numbers and colors, do they matter? Nope. But anyway,
totally do.
They don't. Nurgle is the actual lucky number 7.
That's right.
Yeah. So he is number 7. And when I say they don't matter, someone's probably going to crap on me. Like, they totally, it's like 3 dice rolls you make a game.
They used to matter quite a bit, though. It used to count as a max troop size.
It would. Mm-hmm. That was horrible, by the way. That was awesome. That was a terrible.
I had to spend less points on my guys.
It was a terrible rule. But more importantly, my problem is more, it just doesn't line up because Death Guard on the 7th Legion. That's why I'm complaining. There's things they could have done with it, and they didn't. The colors of Nurgle, Bragdon Sea, I think one of these, are green, brown, and rust.
They kind of just all go together.
Yeah, or as Brad calls it, Nurgle. Yeah. They're all painted this way. Yeah. The more putrid the color, the better. This is where I'm going to, you know, I actually have I have a Death Guard army and I have a Nurgle army. So I have both. I will say painting Death Guard Nurgle is really fun to build and paint because when you get into the models, they're actually broken. Like pauldrons are missing.
I love the
weapons
modeling.
Are busted. Yeah. Weapons are busted. Armor splitting open. Guts are spilling out. They are a really cool model line. And for those people who are like looking to pick up painting, I love them because Nurgle and Death Guard and Nurgle can both be painted very mediocre and look great. Or if you want to dive in, they can look insane, like multiple golden. Those who don't know, Golden Demon is an award given out by GW at major events
for their top
absolute best paint. And it's like, they don't give out a bunch of them. It is a one entry wins the Golden Demon. Mm-hmm. Nurgle and Death Guard units have won it a lot of times. So it's a really great swing.
This is one of my favorite armies and my least favorite armies because I can't see the colors very well. And so I can't, like, I talk to Matt Aaron all the time.
Yeah.
Hey, Matt, does Nurgle unbelievably well? However, I don't get the weathering and stuff, but I do love Nurgle models and the conversions. Because you have these broken models that are still fighting on no matter what, and they still work. And there's Nurglings popping out of the cracks in the armor and shit like that. I love that kind of stuff.
You just put Nurglings on them. So for people who are looking for an army, they're a really great also beginner army because of that. Because if your paint's a little bit sloppy, it actually looks correct.
Yeah, because it's supposed to be.
Yeah, as opposed to, and I've left a note here, because I'm still mad about this, my Thousand Suns army, which is the hardest thing I've ever painted. And I've gotten 9 armies. Thousand Suns are hands down the hardest thing I had to paint because, God damn it, that's a lot of trim.
We'll be right back after a quick break. It's time to accept it. The holidays are upon us, and finding gifts for people is never easy or really fun. Luckily, we at the 40K Lorecast have a new sponsor, which will help you make your holiday shopping fast and easy. Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else. Add some personalization to your holiday shopping with Uncommon Goods. Did I go there and buy the game Fart Bingo? Yeah, I did. Is it for my child to play with his friends? We'll go with, yeah. At the same time, I was able to get a cocktail smoker. So yeah, those are probably all for me. Anyway, that's what's great about Uncommon Goods. They have uncommon, get it, collection of items you can choose from, allowing you to pick up a fun variety of items this holiday season. You'll find thousands of gift ideas that you won't find anywhere else. So, shop early, have fun, and cross some names off your list today. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/40klore, 40klore. That's uncommongoods.com/40klore for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary.
Back to Nurgle. So the land of Nurgle, as we, as you guys are following along, we're kind of doing the same thing for all Chaos Gods, just so there's some uniformity. It makes it easier from a writing standpoint too. So Nurgle's section is the garden. And it is, it's a giant garden where everything is
decaying, of decay and disease.
And disease and spreading decay.
The feculent narwhal.
Yeah, the bloat flies. It is awful. But it is a garden, because I'll get to it in a second.
Well, no, one thing I want to go over to, because we go, haha, fun, Nurgle garden. His realm is a nightmare land.
Oh, yeah.
Of just, there's clouds of flies, which are one of the special rules of Nurgle, but it's clouds, like storms.
Yeah.
It's a sandstorm of disgusting bloated flies that want to suck blood from you.
Yeah, they're also spreading disease.
Right.
Yeah.
And just literally, my first, but it will be an actual correct one. Entire areas of his realm are just made up of disease and decayed body parts and corpses everywhere.
Well, they actually plant, like they actually are planting limbs in the ground, and the limbs then grow into corpse flowers who then bloom by spitting out more rot, decay, and it's vile. You have bloat flies, just like a blot fly from Fallout, but nastier and larger. Beasts of Nurgle, who are not small. We'll get to them in a minute.
And this is one of the big things where why Nurgle, you don't take it over as well. This is also why you just exterminatus the planets.
Yeah.
Because you could win the battle and lose the war because your entire legion, your entire Imperial Guard force, your craft world, your whoever. This is really one of the main reasons why Eldar just go, hey, it's Nurgle. That place is shit. We'll just go somewhere else.
Yeah, we'll go somewhere else. If you want a really good description of what this would look like, if you read the very first book of the Horus Heresy, where I can't remember the plan off the top of my head, but where Horus gets stabbed.
Yeah, that it goes down.
That was a Nurgle incursion, and the space marines were struggling to move. That's how it was so full.
And the thing is, if you've read it before, I encourage you to read that again, because you don't really get the full feeling until you realize much later that, oh, everything they walked on was flesh.
Yeah.
the entire topography.
It was flesh. I think it was just decayed.
No, it was layers of.
Oh, was it flesh? Oh,
yeah.
It was
decayed, but it's effectively just decayed dead
flesh. Yeah,
it was just dead flesh of animals, everything. It was just
they were walking through decay, and it was sticky and like
it was just even, gross.
You know, you know what it was doing? It was poisoning them.
Yeah. Oh, God damn it. Also, props to the people in Discord that gave me shit about that. The Marines were getting poisoned, Brad.
Yeah, it's legitimately funny. Yeah, I mean, these are not, like, the description I made here was not goth. So we're not describing, like, Nightmare Before Christmas land, which is kind of like, oh, it's goth. No, this is horrifying. Fields of limbs planted. You have, like, plants that are going to have, eyeballs all over them. It is just... And everything exists to die.
It's Lovecraftian.
Yeah, it's. I think one description was the air is choke. You're choking on pestilent insects. To Brad's point about the flies, this is if anyone who've ever been through like a sandstorm. I've randomly been through a couple of them. Imagine that, but instead of being sand, it's actually bugs.
I mean, in that book, there's several books that talk about different herbal worlds. If you're not in power armor, if you're not magically warded against it, you just die.
Yeah.
If you and I just walked out there, you're like, I guess we'll die. Like, did you die fighting something? No, I just died to bugs.
Bugs, yeah. And what's kind of the other description I read that I liked was it was describing that even though it's an entire realm of decay and death, it's also completely alive. Everything that you walk through, everything you walk past is alive. It might be dying, but it's alive. You don't get whereas a Khorne's landscape is just clear.
It's because you got to fight. You don't want anything in the way.
Yeah. Whereas Nurgle's is just like, we're going to walk through a forest of decaying
bushes. And you think that Tzeentch would be cooler because things are changing all the time.
In the middle of this is not like a palace or a throne, but just a giant workshop along with gardens. It does actually have a lake full of death, of course.
It's weird because they've described this different.
It moves around, but it's also the warp. So you expect that. I view it as like an English Victorian estate, but of just decay and death. Because Nurgle wanders around this, tending his garden.
Well, also, his minions are all trying to give the look at me at the newest thing they've been doing.
Well, that's the other thing, too. So at the top of his garden, there's a workshop there where they're making new plagues. At all times. And so when all of his demons are coming to him, check out what this one does. It actually turns your insides on the outside. Well, that's a good one. I like that. You know, this is what Nurgle's doing. And they're testing it, of course, on souls that have been captured and brought into the realm. As we said before, when you give your soul to one of the chaos gods, they can just keep using you forever. And Nurgle uses it to poison you over and over and over again.
Well, in a couple seconds, we're going to go, sorry, Eldar fans.
Yeah, so...
You know who he gets to poison a lot? Because most of the people just die.
Yeah, so Nurgle has a special captive.
A special guest.
I guess it's a guest. It's a captive. So when Slaanesh...
For sure.
And this is one that we'll probably do... We're going to have to do some casts in the future of John and Brad's, I don't know, fan theories, but... When Slaanesh, the story was Slaanesh burst in the galaxy, immediately consumed and killed all of the Eldar gods.
Right? Except for the Laughing God and the fragments of Cain.
Yeah. And Isha.
Well, as I'm saying, they added on.
And there may be more ants, is what I'm getting at. My personal theory is I'm not sure if Slaanesh actually just burst and ate them. I think Slaanesh may have tried to torture and kill them. And some of them escaped. So one such was Isha, who is the god of harvest, fertility, and life amongst the...
It's effectively a life cleric. If you're a life cleric in D&D and you're Eldar, you worshiped Isha.
Yeah. Nurgle discovers that this newborn god, by the way, has pulled something off. None of the chaos gods were able to pull off by just effectively killing off the Eldar. And doesn't like the fact that his ultimate enemy, because Isha is the inverse of Nurgle, is being held by Slaanesh. And Nurgle just literally blasted in there with his entire army, grabbed Isha.
And took off.
And went back. So Isha is just hanging out. I mean,
and Isha
Isha wants to leave. Don't get me wrong.
Isha is also casting heal 47,000 times a day because Nurgle is doing not great stuff.
Nurgle is trying to poison the god, the goddess of vitality, life, and rebirth.
A healing god.
Yeah. And so it actually becomes, some of the stories around this get kind of interesting, though, because Nurgle will create a plague. He will release it into the mortal realms. And there are stories of like apothecaries or other sorts of healers effectively getting whispers in the back of their ear of how to cure.
And you get the blessings of Isha. Yeah, this is a big thing because Isha's still trying to interact with, and this is why Isha's a badass goddess. I'm gonna go on a side.
Giving Brad a chance to talk about Eldar is going to happen.
100%.
Yeah.
Because Isha is getting tormented endlessly with no, there's no breaks. Yes. There's not like, hey, we'll catch back up tomorrow.
Yeah, see you tomorrow. Yeah. Oh, it's 5 o'clock. We'll see you in the morning.
Yeah, it's continuous round the clock torture. And during that torture time, occasionally not just trying to keep herself alive, she still tries to go into the mortal realm and help.
Yeah, and she doesn't just help Eldar too, which is important here. She's also, it's human apothecaries. It's not Tau. I'm kidding. Yeah. I don't have a Tau joke. Yeah. I think in this entire episode. So
I don't even know what you're gonna do with that.
Oh, fine. Don't worry.
But one of the big things on that for me with Isha is on that is I love the fact that she's trying to help everyone because she's not a god of just a people. She's a god of healing. She's the god of fertility, and also I'll dial it back a little bit on this. She's also trying to spite this dude because F you.
Yeah, there's also, this is. Yeah.
Hey, Mana, you know, can I stop?
These are mortal enemies by design. Like, it's not like, whereas like Slaanesh and Khorne hate each other. I mean, Khorne hates Slaanesh. You know, a lot of other people who hate each other, they hate each other. But obviously the god of pestilence decay is diametrically opposed to the goddess of life and rebirth.
Well, also you're probably gonna, you and I were diametrically opposed with our views.
Yeah.
Also, I'm probably gonna have a little bit of problems with you because you torture me every day. Remember when we didn't like each other? I like you a lot less. Sorry. Now that you've been torturing me every day, every moment of every day. Yeah.
Next, I'm gonna dive into kind of the demons of Nurgle, which are some of the most diverse, actually, and some of the most, I think, well-described followers. Whereas some of the other ones, like, we talk about pink horrors. It's, you kind of understand what they are, but it's different. Nurgle has great ones.
They're also fun.
Nurglings. Nurglings are a comedic demon.
Yeah, they're awesome.
Yeah, they are fantastic. Anywhere, it also, by the way, they're a mini Nurgle. The best thing about Nurgle is that Nurgle looks like a great unclean one. The same great unclean one is smaller. And the next one down is a Nurgling who's a great unclean one, but like maybe 2 feet tall.
And the best is that Nurglings can be, when you see them in the game, it is a swarm of Nurglings. Yes. It is a bunch of Nurglings. But Nurglings could show up on every model. Mm-hmm. Like they're salacious crumbs sitting on Java.
All of my Chaos Rhinos, all of my Death Guard Rhinos have Nurglings on them. I've randomly put a bunch of them on some of my characters just bases because
one of my favorite rules, it's not a rule anymore, but it was a rule for a while, is Nurglings weren't allowed to take objectives and do things because they had the special rule untrustworthy.
Yes. Nurglings exist. They're almost Tzeentchian in this one. Nurglings exist to create chaos.
They're gremlins. They're just trashing your stuff. Yeah. You're like, what happened to the tank? Those guys didn't do any real damage, but they did unplug everything.
Yeah, you put gas in your car, and Nurgling appears and takes the gas, or just turns it off. It's one of those two. That's what Nurglings do.
He's like, did you flatten all my tires?
but they wouldn't even flatten. They would let the air out. That's what they do. They're weird little creatures, but they're adorable. But they also are. They're a minion. They spread disease. That's what they do with a Nurgling is the kind of thing where it would jump into the water supply by itself. And then boom, that water supply is now corrupted. They do have claws and teeth. I mean, they'll mess you up. Don't get me wrong, but they are
on purpose. All large champions too.
Yeah. They are designed to disrupt and create things. They're small. You'll see them popping like present. They'll rip a hole in a vehicle, not because they're going to run in and kill anything, because a space marine would just step on it and it's dead. They'd rip a hole in the vehicle so the space marines inside could be poisoned by the air outside. This may be my new Tao joke. So, but they also do stuff like they get in the way, you know, like if you go to, there's stories of them effectively linking hands and standing in front and standing in front of a bunch of vehicles. So you have to drive over them because they just get in the way.
Well, one of the bigger things is they'll, again, they trash your stuff. They gremlins it up. They will ruin your beacon. They'll try to mess up your communications. They'll break your shit.
They'll just make it smell real bad. Yeah. So there's a horrible diversion. There's just something that they do. They're not, and that's why I like them so much, because they're not an actual purposeful unit in that regard. They're just in the way, and that's annoying, and that's cool.
And they're taken in every army that has them.
Yeah. On a less fun version are the Plague Bearers. The Plague Bearers are kind of I use the word bipedal. Lots of people know what they're talking about. They are corrupted, probably humanoids.
It's the battle line version. Yeah. It's the most populous of Nurgle's demons. It is their...
Nurglings. That's what I think. I think Nurgles flips on that. I think
possibly
on that. Probably the most populous. But the Plague Bearers are the warriors.
They're the workhorses.
Yeah. So they also, but they have a fun side one. Whereas like with Khorne and with Tzeentch, their workhorses are for war or for whatever. Plague Bearers also tend to Nurgle's garden. They are the ones planting limbs in the garden. They're the ones making sure that
they just do work.
Bloom correctly.
They're always doing something.
Yeah.
These guys are really useful, to be honest. They're incredibly useful,
but they also are made of disease. If you get near a Plague Bearer, it is spewing disease out of it,
they are the most boring to watch, though. They're the workhorses, but also it's kind of like watching The Walking Dead slightly faster.
Yeah, they're zombies. They mosey towards things because they have
sword.
Like on the models, like their arms are falling off on the model. Like it's just the way that they're built to be, just they're in the state of decay. Then you've got your rot flies, which
gross.
Yeah, the cool model though, man. I'll be honest. The
plague drones.
Plague drones, thank you. The plague drones look really, really cool. It's because when I say the blot fly from Fallout is like, you know, we all shoot with a pistol and it dies. These are massive. These things are, you know, not quite dragon size, but they're pretty big. They've got, they're mixed
with, they're Drake size.
Yeah, they are Drake size. You're right. And they actually are, the Plague Bearers will actually ride them into battle. And again, what they do is they fly around and they actually are drooling out poisons and toxins, which would be really bad if you were a space marine. But
God damn it.
But as they fly over things, they actually spread disease, almost like a crop dusting airplane does.
They're ridden by
Plague
Bearers, but they could be ridden by other, they've been ridden by Plague Champions and stuff too.
But then we'll move to one of Brad's favorites, Beasts of Nurgle.
I love these guys.
These things are, I'll be honest, I hate the GW version of these. I don't like the model and never have. It's the giant slug with arms and teeth. They actually put on their back, just to see how far GW goes on these things. They've built it, it's like a giant slug with a giant mouth and teeth. It's got arms. But on the back, it has these tubes, and you'll see them. Like, why are those there? Because those tubes are actually spewing out disease, rot, and pestilence out the back of them. They're really cool. That being said, they're a pain in the ass to build. They're kind of ugly. So if you play the game, one of my favorite things when I play this game is when I play someone who's playing Nurgle Demons, and I see that they have Beasts of Nurgle. I think I've played, in all of the games I've played, against actual Beasts of Nurgle models one time.
They're
so kit-bashed.
I was to say, I don't know if I know what an actual Beast of Nurgle looks like.
I do, because I went to buy them, and I went, not buying that. There are an endless amount of 3D print and alternative models out there, or just people kit-bash them, like mine are Plague Toads.
The AOS models are cooler always.
Anyways. Yeah, everyone has their own thing with these. Beasts of Nurgle, I think, maybe outside of Chaos Space Marine models, they're probably the most kit-bashed model in the game.
I believe then on that because I don't think maybe a Grot from Dark Eldar.
Yeah.
I have no idea what those. Somebody brought a real Grot one time against me and I went.
You mean Grotesque?
Grotesque.
Oh. No, I'm trying to think. I've played against actual Grotesques on at least three occasions. Genuinely think I've played against an actual Beast of Nurgle one time.
Well, let's get psyched on this. You know why they're the best? Because they want to play.
Yeah. This is the rule. Screw the rules. The rules are actually pretty good, but their lore is amazing. They see you and they're like a puppy. They just want to run over and play with you. But it's more like Lenny. I was about to make an Of Mice and Men comment, and I realize who our listener. But if you guys know it is great, but I also realize I'm talking about a book that hasn't been assigned reading in like 20 years
or more.
Yeah.
But still.
So anyway,
I'm gonna love him and hug him.
Yeah. And so what they do is they see someone, they run over to them as fast as they can, or you know they don't have legs, so they kind of squid.
But in playing with them, they wrap them up with their teeth.
Yeah, they hug you and bite you, but you're being played with something that's three times the size of a grizzly bear.
With spiked, gross, rotting, disease teeth.
And so that's actually how they kill you, is they're not trying to kill you, they're trying to love you.
And they're kind of sad after you're dead.
Yeah, they get sad, but they try and find something else to go play with. Yeah, Beasts of Nurgle are, again, it's good GW writing gear. They're terrifying. Like the orcs, they're terrifying on paper, but in lore, you're like, oh, it's actually kind of adorable.
You know who's not adorable?
Yeah, the greater demons of Nurgle are not adorable at all. Great unclean ones.
Whew.
Yeah.
One, they are bonkersville gross.
Yeah. Also, again, awesome model. Amazing
they
model.
Do a wild thing about it, but the actual, when you think about what a great unclean one is, it is just a one-man gang of disease and pestilence. Mm-hmm. They have their own effective ecosystems because they have other creatures that live off them. They have hordes of nurglings. They have rot flies. Their mere presence makes you weaker. Yeah.
Being around them sucks your life force out because there's so much death and decay coming out of them. And they are massive too. It's just a massive mound of decaying flesh.
They're significantly larger than tanks, big tanks. Mm-hmm. Land Raiders pale in comparison.
And one thing we haven't mentioned about Nurgle units, which we should, they are disgustingly resilient.
Indeed they are.
So the thing about Nurgle units is that how do you kill something that's in the middle of dying and decaying? And so what great unclean ones are the greatest example of this. I mean, Stay Puft Marshmallow Man-esque, where it's like you shoot at it with a giant tank shell and it's all made of decaying flesh.
You're like,
so
I put a hole in it, but did he really need any of those parts?
Yeah, the hole goes through and then the hole just decays and falls over. It doesn't heal like Wolverine. It's just
gross.
Yeah, and it's just a giant thing. And that's the kind of the cool rule from a gameplay standpoint all the Nurgle units have is it's disgustingly resilient. You can kill them, but they're already dead. So they don't really care. You blast an arm off of a Poxwalker. All right. Or a Plague Bearer. Sorry.
They are the generals. Mm-hmm. Like as with all of the greater demons, they lead the forces.
Exactly. And so the great unclean ones. But I will say some of them lead from behind. The Great Unclean one, I think, is more like the Bloodthirster in that it doesn't really, it's coming to get you. Like it's not this like, oh, I'm going to command and move the troops strategically. It's we're all going that way, right? Yeah. And I've got the biggest sword.
Also, I'm really gross.
Yeah. As always, kind of what spends on some of the key demons of Nurgle. Before we dive into this, I do want to point out best naming the GW does.
Some of these guys just get played for their names, I swear to God.
Oh, no, absolutely. I have the Sloppity Bile Piper.
These are real names. These are real names. We're not even messing them up for a change.
Sloppity Bile Piper, own one. Spoilpox Scrivener, own that. Horticox Slimux. Don't have one yet. We'll have one probably
shortly. Awesome.
Yeah, all of these, I couldn't tell you what their rules are, but I know I've played them.
He rides a snail.
Yeah, the Horticlex Slimux. Yeah, he rides a snail. There's also Feculent Narmal.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, which is just a tree that you get to put up. It's a
baby garden of Nurgle.
Mm-hmm. But there's a couple favorites I really do have. The first one I want to talk about is Epidemius, who is the tallyman of Nurgle.
Oh, he's the tallyman of diseases.
Yes.
Well, he's the tallyman of diseases and their effects on people. He wants to get a record of every disease and every effectively side effect that every disease has. And he keeps a running total of all of them, names the side effects, names everything that can happen from them. And then you have a different tally man who's actually named the tally man.
Well, a different army too. But what I like about him is that Epidemius also is writing these all down by hand.
On the battlefield, by the way.
On the battlefield. So he rides around on a chair on top that's being carried around by Nurglings. And he's just observing the battle and what's dying and like how they're dying and is writing it down as he rides through the battle.
He's writing the best shift notes ever in a hospital.
Yeah. And I will give them credit. The numbers do come up here. His throne is carried by 7, 21, 14, 28 Nurglings. It's always, it is a
right.
Seven. It's one of the few times they actually wrote it in.
Boom.
Not only that though, when he's out of ink, he just pops one of the Nurglings and uses the insides of the Nurgling to write on his parchment. Or they, I guess they could vomit it up, but it's just gross. It is, this is Nurgle on Nurgle.
Nurgle on Nurgle action.
So let's discuss Nurgle and the Imperium, because we're trying to keep our cast somewhat from the perspective of the Imperium. I think it just helps people with a perspective. Nurgle is the most prevalent and irritating god for the Imperium.
Oh, it's not even close.
Yeah,
the Imperium would rather double the amount of all the three other chaos gods than it would to have Nurgle.
Because Nurgle is inevitable.
Well, it's not even that. Nurgle, whoa. You got to look at this from an accountant state of view.
True.
Nurgle ruins shit because you can't reuse Nurgle's shit.
Oh, yeah. If Nurgle hits a planet hard, planets are gone.
If you have war on a planet, you can repurpose the planet. If you have a cult on a planet, you can just kill everybody in the cult and repurpose the planet. If Nurgle comes to the planet, well, the planet basically no longer exists.
You have to burn the planet to the ground, at which point it's not worth anything to you anymore.
Right. Now you've just torn it up a planet.
Yeah. And Nurgle also, the Imperium, the Imperium creates all four gods, obviously. But, when we think about the Imperium, we talked about hive worlds really well. Overpopulation is a key part of the Imperium. And so whenever you have overpopulation, you're going to get famine, you're going to get war, and you're going to get disease.
And pestilence. Never forget pestilence, John. Never forget pestilence.
So the Imperium's creating this, but also Nurgle, as we were just describing earlier, is creating new diseases in his workshop.
All the time.
And all he has to do is
specifically
just drop one of those diseases into a hive world, and it's going to spread pretty quick because they're not great at sanitation either. Ugh. So
I love the fact that you put the numbers out there.
Oh yeah, actually I did look this up finally. So whatever, we'll do it. So Nurgle relishes in the growth of humanity. So trillions, quintillions, see, I looked it up, guys, of human souls are dying in the Imperium every single day. Most of those are dying probably from some variation of suffering.
Which is also bonkers more than any race in the galaxy.
Yeah. Now they do influence chaos more than anybody else. Now, as these souls reach out to Nurgle to free them from the suffering, Nurgle's there. Nurgle then does what he always does. He makes it so they will not die, but he also is able to use this to infect. And this is where you get a lot of more of his cultist mobs. The Fourth Verse Millennium is made up, so I'm not going to pretend that I actually know what makes a cultist this or that. But I have a hunch that the Nurgle cultist mobs are probably more people who just have been infected by Nurgle.
Well, it's a big thing on that is that you only need one to go in and infect everyone around him. Then you have to worship Nurgle or you will die. And people will do whatever they need to do to not die.
And this will spread pretty quickly. So once you allow Nurgle in, he's able to spread pretty aggressively. And so this is where, from the Imperium standpoint, you don't get a lot of stories of Inquisition hunting down Nurgle, because it's actually really all of the Imperiums hunting down Nurgle.
And the thing is that you don't get it. Nurgle, unfortunately, leads to the least exciting of books, mostly. I mean, there is a couple cool one-on-ones with different demon princes and great Inquisitors and stuff, but as a most part, the Imperium just virus bombs and blows up planets that get infected by Nurgle because that's all you can do.
All they can do. You can't defeat Nurgle.
Yeah, there isn't I'm going to root out. You don't have, the Inquisitors going in and cutting off the head of the serpent and finding out. You're just like, oh, this planet's wrecked by Nurgle. Yeah, just do what we always do and just
burn it.
Burn
the whole thing down because, I will say, I think the Nurgle stories from a book standpoint that revolve around Death Guard are good. Yeah, not all of them, actually.
But they're big battles and stuff. The thing is that you can't have the Inquisition novels a lot of times are like detective novels almost. You can't have a fun give and take because in the end, why would I bother going
down? It's also really easy detective work. Hey, what's going on over there? Oh, everyone's sick and dying. Okay, Nurgle's there. Like it's not complicated.
Yeah. Also, the god that you don't want showing up on your planet if you want to keep living as you were is Nurgle, because no. The Inquisition gives the aliens from it.
Yeah,
gotta nuke it from the sky. The only way to be safe.
Yeah, because I'm trying to think through. There's some great stories on Nurgle, but it's the destroyer plague. It's those types of things, stuff that we'll cover in future. So, anyway, I think that's probably enough coverage of Nurgle for now. We'll probably do some more stuff in the future. We'll talk about Death Guard and we're gonna do some casts talking about the 13th Black Crusade, the Indominus era. In which case, you'll hear us reference some of Nurgle's doings, but. I think this gives everyone a pretty good base of what Nurgle is and
Destroyer.
Yeah. And then we're going to move into Slaanesh.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
So whereas Nurgle is like this god of death, decay, and rebirth, Slaanesh really is a god of YOLO.
Well, I'll give you that. But the thing is that I give more because people like always look at it as pleasure cult and this.
No,
but that's not the thing. Slaanesh is the god of perfection, the god of excess in your striving to be perfect. It's artisans. It's basically anybody that's coming up with ideas. It's musicians. It's artists. But the thing is you can also be an engineer and you want to make the best, I want to make the best cathedral for the Imperium. And even though I'm the most pious of members of the Imperium, I'm driven to be better than all the other engineers that wanted to, put that cathedral up.
And we're going to dive into this in a second, but I do want to say my opinion is I think that the Eldar pleasure cults were what pushed Slaanesh's birth over the edge, but the Eldar's existence created Slaanesh.
Because they're psychos and they get focused on the
desire for perfection.
Exactly. I'm the best muffin baker in the universe. Mm-hmm. Those guys were, and I always make fun of this because the guys that are making pasta are as driven as a striking scorpion's working on his martial techniques. That guy is just as crazy.
Yeah.
So that leads to Slaanesh.
That's what it is. The Slaanesh came from their desire for perfection. But a couple little pieces on what Slaanesh does. So Slaanesh, heavily, it is the god of excess pleasure and perfection. And when we use a perfection, it really is, the perfection is more of a proxy. It's mostly people, it's the inverse. The excess and the pleasure are the proxy of the real thing, which is perfection. Slaanesh cares about perfection, but when you are obsessed with perfecting your craft, it's because you're taking pleasure in that perfection and you're willing to go to excesses to achieve
it. And also you have to have an excess of pride.
Yeah.
And Slaanesh is very big on pitting you against rivals.
Yep.
You could be, you're good, but you're not as good as John because he's clearly better than you are.
And we'll talk about some great references for this with the Horus Heresy and... let's just say the turning of the Emperor's Children was not about like a pleasure cult. It was about perfection. So we mentioned before how much Khorne hates Slaanesh. I just want to explain why. Because Khorne, first off, Khorne's the oldest, Slaanesh is the youngest. So like any sibling, the oldest does not like the youngest.
Khorne's also arguably the most serious. Mm-hmm. And Slaanesh is considered a child, a fop.
Because Slaanesh doesn't even have a true purpose. We'll discuss this shortly, but Slaanesh almost feels torn in her goals, in my mind, whereas Khorne has very singular. Also, Slaanesh just is looking more for a feeling. So torture.
Why strike from the shadows when you could challenge someone and show that you're martially better than them?
Khorne looks at the way Slaanesh fights and just goes, this is pathetic. You don't have warriors. Khorne doesn't really like torture. He wants combat. Why would you tie someone down when you can make them stand and fight in front of you? And Slaanesh, the other way around, just finds Khorne to be boring. Slaanesh is kind of doing that whole thing of like, why are you doing this? Like, you have no they really do, they are good inverse of each other. Khorne's viewpoint is it should all be, you know, one-on-one combat or like great combat and slasher viewpoint is like
shallow and pedantic.
Yeah, I just want my person to win. Why do you not care who wins? So they detest each other. And this is where a lot of this, though, is the fact that Slaanesh is an immature god. It's only
by god sense.
Yeah. Well, she's less than 10,000 years old. Probably, you know, I think of Slaanesh kind of like if you've ever, you know, bought a dog or seen a puppy. Even at a year, they're still not all the way used to it.
Well, 10,000 years of full being Slaanesh sentience. Slaanesh was roiling around in the warp.
Well, so was Khorne before, but Khorne. Yeah,
but I mean, how long?
I mean, probably got 30,000 years.
Well, no, I'm saying that I'm saying to the gods, though, you know, Khorne could have been around for millions of years. Slaanesh could have been almost around.
If you're talking about from pure sentience, Khorne is over four times older.
At least, yeah, true.
Yeah. And so that's why. So Slaanesh is still learning her powers. Even like Slaanesh's goals feel conflicted because we hear about Slaanesh just, you know, wants to consume all the souls of the Eldar, but is also affecting mankind, is doing all his
things. Well, it's a lot of things because also like Slaanesh wants to feed on all the souls of the Eldar and hasn't fed on an Eldar soul in like a hot minute too.
Yeah, and so it's going on. So my impression of it, and I don't know, again, this is my impression. I don't know if GW meant to write it this way, is that Slaanesh is also just learning new things that make Slaanesh happy, where it is this piece of a human being giving their soul over their whatever to Slaanesh gives Slaanesh a lot of joy.
I mean,
and that's a new thing for Slaanesh because when she was born, her whole thing was, I'm going to kill every one of these.
Yeah, and then, but she didn't bail on the Eldar because it's still the one, the thirst, the great devourer.
Yeah.
But that's one of the things that Slaanesh does now she did a quick sidestep. I am the anti-Eldar, I'm the great boogeyman of the Eldar, and then she went, oh, look, humanity, and just kind of walked away.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah. Also, if every time those Eldar die, I'm going to eat you, but I'm going to go over here for a while. And
this really is way cooler.
The birth of Slaanesh, we covered. Short, long story, very short. Eldar are a race of perfection. They got bored at some point and then started, you know, killing each other and
just doing horrible things,
which took the god of perfection and then taught it pleasures of the flesh, for lack of a better phrase, and it exploded. And around the year 30,000, the warp disturbances that had been going on for a bit before this, a new god emerged.
This is a long process, though. Yeah. They really don't.
10,000 years?
Yeah, because we had no warp travel for a while. This is the Dark Age. This is after
Slaanesh caused the Dark Age of Technology.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's after, because the Dark Age of Technology was our glory time. It's the after point.
Yeah, the Age of Strife.
The Age of Strife.
Because it wasn't really the
Dark Age of Technology was awesome. Yeah,
it was the Age of Technology, but no one to talk about it. So now it's the Dark Age of Technology, followed by the Age of Strife, although they kind of overlap. That's not important. So, yeah, Eldar is born. She kills and consumes currently all but three of the Eldar gods. Depending on what year you were playing this game, it was all of the Eldar gods. Then it was one of the all but one, then all but two. Now we're at all but three. We'll see who else pops around. Also, probably consume 90% of the Eldar population. That's just at birth.
True story.
Powers of Slaanesh, as we discussed, it depends. The original writing on Slaanesh was the seven deadly sins: gluttony, sloth, greed, lust, pride, wrath, and envy. These are the things that Slaanesh loves. But the truth is, they all circle back to perfection. That is what Slaanesh really feeds on.
And that can kind of go into, we'll do alliteration on it, because it can be perfection and pride. Because you can't
have perfection without pride. Yeah. No one's.
Because you can have good pride, to be honest with you.
Yeah. And no one's that perfect. You can just, your overwhelming desire for perfection comes from pride.
And because it's an excess of anything.
You guys can tell by the audio editing of this podcast, I don't suffer from that. But this comes from very interesting areas, though. Slaanesh feeds on the desires of people, this perfection. The most powerful versions of Slaanesh are actually in artists and actually warriors. And by artists, we don't just mean someone making art. It can be art, it can be music, it can be meals, it can be architecture, whatever it is.
It's a big thing because it can be on, when you talk about artisans, It's the people making things. Mm-hmm. You can be the best person that puts railways out. You're the best rhino creator of all time. And you take great pride in the fact that you are an innovator. You're the mm-hmm. best. You make the cleanest versions of these. You make the best feast for the imperial rulers. And you want to be better and better. And you get, again, pride and excess go into that. And you want to be better. Also, remember the Imperium is a giant place. For you to make an impact, you have to be
very significant,
wildly the best at something. And you have to be better. You know, it's being the best isn't good enough. You have to exactly. be the best, and you have to let people know you're the best. And you have to be so much the best that it has to be wow. You have to come out with flair. We're going to Ric Flair it.
I will say one thing I like about the writing on Slaanesh is they do explain the way your corruption to Slaanesh goes. This is the only god that they do it a bit for Nurgle, but Slaanesh is, in my mind, makes the worst deal of all the gods with you.
Well, it's the best deal at first. You know what I'm saying? You think it's the best deal.
Because Slaanesh gives you what you want. We'll use cooking, for example. If you want to make the greatest chicken anyone's ever had, right? They don't have there, so it's corpse starch chicken, but that's a side note.
Could be engrossed. They have chicken on other.
They have chicken, but anyway, the greatest chicken. Slaanesh will actually allow you to make a chicken that no one has ever tasted this good in your life. And this recipe is yours. It's not a one-time thing. You could make this over and over again. But what that Slaanesh does is then she infects your brain. And makes you not make, that's not enough. Now you have to do the greatest chicken and rice.
Well, and the thing is that everything else also starts to be ash. Mm-hmm. Anything besides your best is nothing. It might as well be, again.
It's a failure. Yeah.
It is cigarette. Not only is it awful, but it's a failure. Mm-hmm. And you start going farther and farther and you make the best. And so nothing else will satiate you except for this. And then Slaanesh has you on the hook and goes, well, only I can provide that thing that gives your entire life meaning. Mm-hmm. Looks like you'll do whatever it takes to get that thing again, right? Correct? Yep.
It just keeps taking more and more and more from it. It always ends the same way. It actually ends with you ending your life. It's really cool from a writing standpoint, but this is the evil of Slaanesh. Slaanesh always gets there.
And they're great stories of that, though.
Yeah.
And the best stories of Slaanesh are fantastic stories because they make sense too.
Fulgrim. I mean, that's the thing. It's Fulgrim and what's his nuts?
Lucius.
I mean, the story of Lucius and Fulgrim are both fantastic. And it's
people falling, but they don't think that they're falling, but they're actually originally trying to make themselves better the Emperor.
Lucius just wanted to be the greatest sword dueler in all of the Imperium.
Fulgrim wanted his legion to be the perfect legion.
Yep.
So. And they start falling down. And lots of these, they have lots of, to be honest, to be fair, a lot of the fanfic on this and different stories on YouTube, they've done a lot of good things.
Oh, yeah.
People falling to Slaanesh are fantastic because they do it from, again, the baker, the engineer, the whatever. Those people falling to Slaanesh, I think, is fascinating because Slaanesh is looking for these key pieces in the Imperium. Because, yes, if I take over Fulgrim, yes, that's a huge blow. But like the day-by-day people that are responsible for, hey, the logistics point of this planet mm-hmm. that supplies all these battles.
It's all of the best. That's what Slaanesh is. Slaanesh is trying to take all of your best.
And your best logistics people are still the best. And they can make a huge impact.
To Slaanesh because they're trying to do good by the Imperium.
Exactly. That's why I think it's fascinating because none of these people are like, down with this. They're like, no, I want to do mm-hmm. better than anybody's ever done. I want to be the best person for the Emperor. I'm the most loyal of citizens. And then you go, no, you've been a Slaanesh worshiper for years now. And you're like, what? Oh, man. I'm the bad guy? Yeah. You're for sure.
You're the baddie. Numbers and colors, as we always cover.
Sorry.
I almost just spit wine because he knows where this is going. Slaanesh's number is 6 and their colors are purple, pink, and black. That's all I got here. It's just I'm at the fourth one and I just don't care anymore because they've never made this of any value to the game.
Their colors are my favorite colors of the demons by far, hands down. You can see. because I love the darks going into lights. I can see that very well, but I also think it looks great on the tabletop if you're painting a Slaanesh army. I just love the highlights because the highlights catch the light on tabletop.
Yeah, I like them the least. Anyway. So Slaanesh in the Warp is actually one of the more...
It's pretty weird, actually.
Sometimes GW leans in hard. Now, usually when they lean in hard, and in this case, it does involve a lot of plagiarism, but that's not important.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
So Slaanesh has a giant complex. At the center is Slaanesh's temple.
Hold on. I'm sorry to interrupt. I'm not sorry. I interrupt all the time. But I'm going to give everybody the preface of we cannot even remotely do justice and not make this the weirdest podcast ever to the Six Rings of Temptation of Slaanesh.
Yeah, but I love
it. It's six rooms also.
Yeah, it's Slaanesh, as you try to get to the center of Slaanesh, it's not because they say rings, it's six realities,
basically.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's not like there's like a ring and you get to the next level. They stole this. I will say Dante's Inferno was 9, so it's not a dead rip, but
it's fully Dante's.
But I've read Dante's Inferno and it's, I think so did some of their writers. Anyway, so each of the rings, the idea of Slaanesh is the god of temptation. So at each stage, it's trying to tempt you with a different thing that would naturally make you go.
Also, the thing is that you have to enter all of these willingly. These aren't you're forced to do battle. You got sucked in.
Yeah.
You have to agree to go into
each of them. And then once you're in them, you have to then walk away from whatever they are to get access to the next one.
Yep.
I mean, these are trials. I would actually refer to them more as the trials of Slaanesh is probably would have been a better naming mechanism for this, but.
Well, I like to say realities because Slaanesh puts you in some of these trials in a different life where it's a reality.
The reason I use the word trials is because you have to overcome each of them.
True. Yeah, 100%. Ring,
like, you can't just walk through it. You have to interact with it.
Well, it's not even just interacting. You might live a lifetime.
Yeah, there.
There.
Yeah, these. And so they all have different ways that they kill you if you get trapped. So the first one is the ring of excessive riches. It's just a realm of endless amounts of incredible wealth, gold, jewels, diamonds. And the further you kind of progress through it, the greater these things are. So you're talking about, I mean, this wouldn't really work on like an invading corn army, but you know,
they don't even notice it.
Like, huh?
Cause they took the gems and they mounted it on their axe.
Yeah. It's like, all right, I'll hit someone with this. This looks sharp. But as you wander through these, there is a life-altering wealth sitting in front of you. You could pick up a couple of these.
But the thing is,
brain, I could pick this gem up.
But they give you the access to a different reality. If you bend to the will, Slaanesh convinces you that your riches are now, they lead you to be in a palace and this. And all of a sudden you go, oh, crap, this isn't actually reality, and now I'm going
to
die.
Yeah, what happens, a lot of these ones are designed to trap you so that you just wander endlessly. So what happens if you do bend down to pick up any of these gems, jewels, whatever it is, you naturally see one right in front of it that's actually worth more than the one you're bending down to pick up. And, you know, this isn't, you know, like any good RPG, you've got limited carry capacity. So then what happens is you drop the one in your hand to go grab the next one. And then the next one. So you end up forever wandering around trying to pick up the next greatest gem, the next greatest thing.
But you get rewarded and then still have it. So you're, and then you're obviously enticed to be more and more filled with greed.
Yeah. If for whatever reason you see the endless riches, you then go to the excess of sustenance. And I wrote here, Brad and I are gone.
Yeah, I get killed.
This one, we're done. This is where this one take us both out. So first off, giant leg of wine.
Yeah, I'm already.
So we're out.
I still haven't gotten farther. I heard there was more trials here, John. I don't know what I'm supposed to do besides.
This is where I want to be. Like, whereas the space wolves would just be lost in Korn's world. This is where Brad and I just go. Yeah, this is my new home. So you actually will drink. People start drinking wine from the lake, and then eventually they go into the lake, and then they drown drinking wine out of a lake. To which my note was. There's worse ways to go.
One of the bigger things is they give you the most delicious thing of anything you've ever tasted, the most wine, the food, mm-hmm. the whatever. And the thing is, one of the best, of, I can't remember the story of it, but even people that have successfully broken out of this ring, they're ruined forever because you always have the memory
of how good it tastes.
Of how good, and everything is terrible.
We probably should mention, at the center of this lake of wine is an island, and it's an island of food. Now, it gets a little gross about, like, is some of the food made up of other beings
that, yeah, that failed the thing?
I just skipped that part because I read that. I'm like, that's dumb writing. I like thinking of it much more because this is also stolen from Greek mythology. I don't think it was Dinocerus. I don't think doing it right now, but there's a Greek mythology that this falls into. But I like thinking of it as, you don't drink wine, cool. But if you go to this island, do you eat food? I don't care what you eat. The best version of food that's ever existed is in there at an infinite quantity.
Yep. This is my favorite because even when you win against Slaanesh, you still lost because now everything is trash forever. Because you always have that memory.
You'll never taste anything this good.
Yeah. Even if you win, you defeat everything, you leave the realm of Slaanesh, you always have in your mind how everything pales so, not even close. You're eating saltine crackers that don't have salt on them for the rest of your life.
But let's just, for again, you don't care about money. You don't really care about food because you're a space marine and you don't poop.
But you do get poisoned.
Yeah, the poisoned. The next is the ring of bodily delights, which I call the eyes wide shut ring. This is the one where we think about Slaanesh a lot of times. This is the one. It's the orgy ring. That is what it is, but full of demonettes.
And this is the one where I feel like, come on, man. If you know where you're going, I can see
this is the one you saw coming.
Yeah.
This is the one you were. So the only reason, my viewpoint is, there's people who probably get to this ring because they went to this realm for this ring.
Yeah.
Like the first one, like, I don't care about the money. I don't care about the food. There it is. Like, I'm here. Yeah.
Also, like, this is the ring that instantly, it doesn't even trap you and you just get murdered.
Yeah.
You're like, hey, I got my jam on with all these girls and Daemonette's murdered me instantly. Yeah, and you're like, Daemonette's. Like, guys, come on.
Can I hang out here for a little bit? The other ones, you can eat food for eternity.
But also, you kind of saw this coming. You're like, as the Daemonette's killing you, you're like, yeah, I should have probably seen that coming.
But again, let's pretend, again, you're a very, like, noble space marine. Like, you know, a dark angel. So it's okay. You know, like, all right, I don't care about the money. I don't care about the food. And I don't care about the eyes wide shut. The next one can kind of get you. This is called the Ring of Adoration. So this is where you are met.
What's the next couple rings are actually the...
But this is the first of multiple swings at you that Slaanesh does. So in this one, it's just people thanking you.
And we have to back it up again because Slaanesh creates realities that you can get mm-hmm. trapped in. This isn't like two Daemonettes are like, you're the best, bro. No,
it's someone manifesting, referring to something that you have done.
But also, you might think that it is the reality.
You think you're in reality.
You pop in and go, and you, I must have busted out of Slaanesh's realm because I'm back with the Dark Angels. I'm back on Caliban, and I'm being rewarded. I'm the adoration from everyone about how well you did mm-hmm. when you went to Slaanesh's realm. You defeated easily all the Slaanesh. You didn't fall prey to any of the desires or the wants. And then you just sit there. And then you waste away on your little throne of adoration and you never left Slaanesh's realm and you still die there. Yep. And you think that you're the best.
But again, maybe you're a person who doesn't really like praise. So I don't know. What are we? I don't even know what Space Marine chapter I've gotten to now. It's probably Grey Knights at this point. So, or maybe you just never did anything to deserve praise. Who knows? Anyway, but the Ring of Achievement is what's going to hit you next. And the Ring of Achievement is rough because this one you actually live a fantasy of,
it's your own doing
of the achievement. So whereas the one before, you know, the Ring of Adoration, they're rewarding you for something that you have a memory of, something you did that was really noble. Maybe you just haven't for whatever reason. The Ring of Achievement is the fantasy world. So now they will create something. You will, you know, slay a beast, or if you're an artist, you will sit there and then you'll pick up an instrument. If you're a musician and start playing something, and you will play a masterpiece, or you will compose a masterpiece. Maybe if you're just kind of more of a nefarious person, you can practice. If you're a pirate, you'll conquer a star system. I mean, these are the fantasies that you live out, and it is real. You are living this out, and you will be here forever as you live out this great thing. And then you could potentially then find yourself back in the ring of adoration as a result of it. Yeah, but whatever.
And it's a big thing on this. Remember, it's the warp. So this, while it's not happening, it is happening because you have unlimited resources. You have the holodeck. You have the holodeck from Star Trek times 1 billion because you can make, I'll make a fake galaxy for you to live out your weird dreams so that I can trap you. That's what you have access to in Slash's realm.
The last ring is actually, from a writing standpoint, my favorite. So if you think about this, you've been through five trials so far. Each of them has pulled you in a different direction. Maybe some of them didn't speak to you, but some of them definitely did. And you had to really gather yourself to get through. The last one hit is the ring of repose, which is just a break. It's all of a sudden you come into this realm and there's like a rock or a bench and you sit down on it. And it is the most comfortable you've been in your entire life.
And you're fed with, well, why are you doing this? You should be fine. Like, just take a break.
You're okay. Just take a minute. It's okay.
Catch your breath.
Look how far you've come. You're doing great. Just sit here for a minute. And time just begins to go and go.
Oh, and you don't even notice.
It's so
nefarious. Like, all I want to do is I want to sit for a moment. Mm-hmm. Like, why would you deserve to just catch your breath?
The meme from whatever game that was, probably from You're in My Youth, of like, wary traveler. Rest here, wary traveler. It is, to me, this is so nefarious. But the entire place is designed to be comfortable. Every step you take is downhill. The wind that blows over you feels like it's massaging you. So you just naturally, it is a ring of comfort. And so it just slows you down till eventually you just go, yeah, I'm going to take a minute. Just give me a minute. I'll get there. And then you're gone.
And then, of course, it's the way that time works in the warp. And sometimes with this ring, Slash isn't trying. Sometimes she is. Yeah. She's trying to capture you forever. But sometimes you're just going to miss the battle.
Yeah.
I don't need to keep you forever. I just need you to miss. Yeah. Like, maybe you sat down and you're like, I do need a second. Mm-hmm. And that second is actually 100 years. And now you've just completely missed the entire incursion.
Now, Slaanesh, just like with Khorne, interesting, they don't actually talk about this with Nurgle, but with Khorne and with Tzeentch, if in some way you were to get through all the trials and get to the end, you meet Slaanesh. And meeting Slaanesh is bad, because Slaanesh is the most beautiful creature that has ever existed.
And it also is the most beautiful creature according to you.
To you, exactly. Yeah, you can't argue this one.
And then you go, has the Emperor been using chaos powers the entire time? Yep.
Yep, exactly. And so what happens is, if you ever meet Slaanesh, you will just be paralyzed by Slaanesh's beauty. But Slaanesh doesn't want you here. So she instantly kills you.
Well,
the end. Yeah.
It's a bummer.
And I want to point out, one thing I give GW credit on and run this is that no one's ever, that's how it always ends. There is no like, well, then so-and-so was able to. No, every time someone gets there, they get the achievement of meeting Slaanesh. They are dead as soon as they meet Slaanesh.
You get your achievement and your steam, and then you get killed.
So from there, we'll do, again, we've been, same recipe we've been doing over and over again, same one, the followers of Slaanesh.
And these have been done very differently over the ages.
Yeah.
Because Daemonettes are the battle line, the go-to, again, the clock in, the Cal Ripken Jr. of the demons. They're most populous, and these have been horribly terrible to look at, beautiful to look at, some version of both, because they're women, they're females with claws for arms, and they have been done wildly different over the years of whether they're just super beautiful with some ways to fight or horrifying with some
ways to fight.
They've always had ways to fight, but
they're also immensely fast. So whereas Nurgle is kind of this plodding army, the Slaanesh are fast.
Lightning fast.
Yeah, too. They are incredible. And they do come from Eldar, who are also lightning fast.
Exactly. They're basically vampires from the Anorice vampires.
Oh, is it Blade? I don't
know. No, I'm just saying they're super fast. They're
all over you. Yeah. And I mean, the Daemonettes, they perform for Slaanesh. This is not only the warriors, but they're also, as we were talking about with
this is why they're so different. This is why they could be any different forms, because they do perform. They literally perform. Is it music? Is it art? Is it dancing? Is it it's all of the above.
And Demonettes, they serve this weird purpose, because the stories are like Slaanesh sits around in her castle and the Demonettes are there gossiping and telling her stories. And this is kind of what the Demons do. But they'll put on performances. They do all this stuff. Because again, Slaanesh, I don't really think Slaanesh fully knows her purpose yet.
Well, Slaanesh is also a fickle mistress, because they also tear down what Slaanesh doesn't like.
Oh, yeah.
And the thing that Slaanesh loved this moment, the next moment might be the thing that she hates.
Which also could mean the fiends are killing other fiends who were performing the same play for the thousandth time. But this time, Slaanesh no longer loves it. So kill all of them. Beyond them, you also have fiends who are just beasts of Slaanesh. They're a centaur meets a crab and a scorpion.
And they're so different. They're wildly different in shape.
Do you know what the scorpion tail's good at, though? Poisoning space marines.
Ah, Jesus. Of course it is. It's like four times in one episode.
It's fun.
But they are disconcertingly beautiful, even though they're horrifying to look at. In all the stories, almost everyone that meets these is like, gross, this is a weird thing. And then they're also taken aback. Yeah, they're taken aback by their aestheticness.
Yeah, you can Google it. It's a centaur crab scorpion. But people see them and it's like, I've never seen beauty like this in my life.
And the movements, closer to it. Mm-hmm. They get mesmerized by the movements of how it's basically how the Eldar move.
Mm-hmm.
Eldar are described as moving too quickly and too precisely.
Slaanesh, it's unnerving. Yeah.
Yep. And Slaanesh does this, but times 100. They take everything about them and go farther.
Yeah. Slaanesh has a greater demon. It is named the Keeper of Secrets. Whew. Okay, so these things are weird. They've got forearms, horns.
They have
laser sharp teeth.
You know, we're gonna pause. We're pausing on this one because this has been described differently, retconned, and the model has always been, well, not even always been. It's changed also.
Yeah,
it is a giant.
A few times.
Yeah, well, it used to have more creepy shit. So, yeah.
Oops.
Yeah. So. It's always been a giant demon. It's a greater demon. They're all huge.
Mm-hmm.
They're giant monsters. But depending on the story, sometimes they're beautiful. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they're only mesmerizing because of their movements and stuff.
Exactly.
And it really depends on what story you read of. Is it a creature of great beauty? Sometimes.
Well, it's always perceived as a creature of great beauty.
They do always have forearms. They've got horns, and they've got a mouth full of razor sharp teeth. They appear different to different people. I think that almost always the Slaanesh creatures project onto your mind what you want to see.
Exactly. And I think, and so the Keeper is a good example of this. The Keeper is this monstrous beauty, but it is also, and it's kind of, this is the theme amongst Slaanesh demons. We describe them as being beautiful, but they're not. They're actually quite gross. But they project an aura around them that makes you perceive them as beautiful. So they always look...
is whatever you think is beautiful, too.
I mean, look at the model. You're like, oh, I mean, it's definitely more slender and feminine than anything else that in the line.
But it's still
growing
with crab claws and blades and all kinds of other things. It's the magic around them. They have an aura around them.
And one thing I like to talk about is that the way they actually can fight, they're up there with like bloodthirsters and their ability to be able to fight, because they actually have precog. So when they're fighting, they'll actually sense movement and they'll counter that movement. And they're known for this. They'll always, like, you can be attacking them with a flurry and out of nowhere, they just cut your head off. That's a Slaanesh attack. I mean, this is why Lucius is a good example of...
Even though he's gotten beat like 27 times.
But originally he was. That was his thing.
Yeah. And the thing is with them is they have that aura. They have the aura of Slaanesh. You know what I mean? And which is why they often had, in multiple versions now, had fights first, because you were taken aback by what you perceived as the great beauty. And it's whatever beauty. You could just be, I really think that they're amazing in their movements. You could just be a swordsman really saying that I appreciate the movements of that swordsman. And then they stab you and you're like, I should probably have been doing less worrying. Like, that John's really good with that sword. I really appreciate how he stabbed me.
I'm dead. Yeah,
I should have definitely did something to defend myself versus that excellent movie was doing.
One area I want to kind of spend some time on after this is when we talk about like notable demons of the gods. Everyone's got some unique ones and they all have some story, but Slaanesh has one that's actually really insidious. And it's because we're about to talk about Slaanesh and the Imperium.
You know, it's not going to be Shalaxy just cutting people in half.
Well, that's what if Shalaxy, you got a bunch of people like, okay, that's a story, but it's just, it's kind of a story that is a extension of Slaanesh. The bloodthirsters, you can't go around that, but I like doing some stories here about ones that are like the Changeling or the Blue Scribes. They're kind of a weird, almost sort of a left turn within it. The Lady of the Voids are terrifying.
Because yes.
What the Lady of the Voids are, Slaanesh, it's a special demon and it preys specifically on astropaths. Astropaths are the members of the Imperium that actually communicate. So if you're on a ship or you're on a planet or anywhere and the Imperium is trying to communicate within its giant network, the only way to do it is to send messages through the warp to each other.
Which are almost instantaneous, but can be forever.
Yeah. The astropaths, and our next cast, we're talking about these guys. So I'm not going to dive too much into it, guys, but this is what it is. The astropaths are specifically adjusted by the Imperium to make them more resistant to chaos. The Lady of the Voids actually hunts them down and gets into them.
She's a siren, basically.
Yes, that's a good point. And then what happens, the Lady of the Voids target the astropaths and they find a way into them. When they do, the astropath, if they can get in, will explode and the demon pops out, killing anything and everything around the astropath and bringing more demons in. And this matters a lot because, oddly enough, one of the least protected parts of the Imperium ships are the bridges, because they're so heavily fortified with Geller fields and, you know, you have
fortifications around them.
And as anyone who played Mass Effect knows, you don't need windows on spaceships. So these are all something not actually in the front of the ship. They're actually surrounded by, you know, entryways. It's not easy to get to the bridge. So if you blow up inside of the bridge and make your invasion from inside the bridge, it's significantly worse. This is something Slaanesh is really good at. And that's terrifying for the Imperium, because even if, don't forget, let's just say best case scenario, you got some space marines on the bridge with you. Your astropath explodes as a demon. Well, yeah, you kill it, but now you have no astropaths.
Good luck getting home.
Yeah, you can't tell anyone where you are. You can't tell anyone what happened. You now have to jump out of a system into somewhere. Maybe your navigator survived. Maybe. But you could take out the warp drive on a ship. And the ship's fine. They'll call for backup. Whatever. Backup comes. You take this out, no one knows.
And Slaanesh has one of my other favorite demons, which is the Epitome.
Oh, I forgot about the Epitome. Yes.
Well, the anti-psyker, who just negates other psychic, which are the people that are trained specifically to take care of demons. She negates their powers.
Your blank. So if you're a blank, we're going to talk about blanks pretty in the near term.
She messes with your blanks. She messes with the other people that are psychic, because she absorbs psychic powers.
Mm-hmm.
So you all of a sudden go, wait a second, what's even happening? Our counter to you, I countered your counter.
Yeah, it's the Uno.
Uno reverse. I reversed your reverse. Reverse
your reverse and Uno. That's... God, I wish they should just put an Uno card on her.
And that is what she does, though. Mm-hmm.
Slaanesh has, I like some of Slaanesh demons.
You know what? Let's talk about Slaanesh and the Imperium, because I think, and I'm going to make people mad that love Slaanesh as their main god. If Slaanesh was more focused, and it's hard to be focused when your whole being is not focused.
Right.
Because she is frivolous. Mm-hmm. She's looking for the best of whatever the thing in front of her is. And then she moves on to the next best of the thing that's in front of her, because she could single-handedly, as much as Tzeentch has machinations in place, Slaanesh could ruin the Imperium, just doesn't.
Yeah, it's that's why I view Slaanesh as, despite being the god of perfection, she seems to have a lot of ADD.
Yeah.
Because it's just like, oh, this one, this for a little
bit. Like, you could just be, I took all of your best people in charge of the Astropass, in charge of logistics, in charge of making new tanks. Well,
she could, it's almost more insidious that she could make it so that you could never, it's almost like Idiocracy. She could make it so that no one is ever good.
Yeah.
Because the second that they begin to excel in
yeah, she becomes doing, hers.
It becomes hers.
And but she doesn't.
Yeah, she doesn't, which is.
She just kind of picks and chooses things that she's interested in.
Well, it feels, my feeling on that, again, didn't write it, but it's still my feeling, is that Slaanesh really cares less about that and more about the praise to Slaanesh. So anyone that wants to reach out to Slaanesh and give her praise or give her, you know, their soul, she wants. And so she's just not as strategic in her picking, whereas Tzeentch is very strategic. Tzeentch only wants the best psychers, only wants the most powerful nobles, only wants them, even Khorne.
Well, he wants them in specific places too.
Mm-hmm. Whereas Slaanesh is just, if you're in a hive city and you're just begging for, you know, hey, I wrote the world's worst chord, but I'd like it to be better. Slaanesh actually might listen and then come give you a boon to give you a thing, because she just enjoys the process. The problem for the Imperium, though, is that mankind, guys, it's a nightmare zone. The Imperium of Mankind is just at its core a nightmare zone. And Slaanesh is everywhere for this. The problem with it being a nightmare zone is to what Brad was just saying, is that the Imperium themselves have to create Slaaneshian things. You know, in order to distract the populace from how horrible it is, we need music, we need art, we need all these things. And as you're encouraging more people to make these arts, these things, and we're not even going to get into, you know, the pleasure worlds right now, you're just creating Slaanesh worlds. And so this just leads to one thing after another. And so Slaanesh is able to affect both the lower classes, the upper classes, the working classes.
And the thing is that you think about it, you're like, hey, even the worlds that don't have art, you know, the hive worlds might not have anything.
Yeah.
But the problem is that the easiest to get people of Slaanesh, because Slaanesh often, again, gives you a little bit of repose. Mm-hmm. I'll give you a little bit of not suck on your day.
The other one, too, is Slaanesh, as we talked about the Emperor's Children, does a really good job with soldiery, which is something that Nurgle doesn't, and even Tzeentch doesn't. Khorne obviously does. But again, why those two hate each other? If you're an infantryman, you're a artilleryman, you're even a space marine, and you're just trying to be the best.
Well, Slaanesh might show up.
Slaanesh and Khorne are both right there with you the whole time, offering to make you a better swordsman, a better sniper, a better whatever it is. And goodbye, everybody, when, like, your best sniper is actually on the side of Slaanesh.
And then you get shot in the head.
Yeah, it seems like this isn't going to work out well. But I think from there, that's probably a good enough dive into these gods. This episode went quite long, so that's why it feels like a sudden break, guys, because I just looked at how long we've been casting for. And went, oh, yeah, there we go. But from there, I think we're just going to conclude our coverage of the Chaos Gods. I hope you guys enjoyed these deep dives. We did not cover Malal. There's a reason. We're going to cover that probably in a future cast on some fans' fiction around what Malal really is. Cough, cough, the Emperor, in my opinion. But because Malal existed for a while, then disappeared.
We're also going to probably do a really big deep dive on the Tau Chaos God.
Yeah, the Chaos God of Tau, of no one cares about you.
I just had to throw that out there because I knew that you haven't had enough Tau. You haven't kicked Tau enough in this episode. So.
Nah, I'm kicking Space Marine poison for a little bit. So it's my new
That obsessed me so much more than you kicking Tau.
Our next cast, we're going to dive into the psychers of the Imperium, namely where they are. Because you feel like there were a lot of them, and then these ships showed up, and then they're all gone.
There's so many less.
Yeah. Mm. Might have something to do with a certain golden throne, a certain corpse emperor. A
certain color of ship that shows up.
Yeah. Ooh. But as always, please like and subscribe to the cast. Again, said it before, said it again, join the Discord, interact with the community so you can help us out. If you have questions, great place to ask. If you have requests for upcoming casts, great place to ask. Also, really impressive place to tell us when we get something wrong, because you'll see we'll respond pretty quickly with, yeah, my bad, I'll fix it. So, sorry. But with that, this is John Barsotti and Brad Chester.
This guy.
See you guys next week.